All right, and welcome back to the Minnesota Sports Fans Unfiltered Show. It is Nick. I'm here with Brandon and Lonnie. We are coming to you recording tonight, this afternoon, live from City Works downtown Minneapolis. We're going to talk about that aplenty because this place is fantastic. You've been here before?
I have not, but I am extremely impressed. This is a really, really cool place.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Brandon and I broke bread here earlier this week. What we tried so far was very good. We've got some more things on the way we're going to give a try to, and we're pretty psyched to be here. But the primary reason that we're here, of course, is to talk about these teams that are our favorites. Sometimes, most of the time, I guess it's a love-hate relationship. But nonetheless, after rooting for teams like the Vikings for 40-odd years, as I have, it's damn hard to root for another NFL team, so I'm not switching now. So that's why we're here, and as normal, we'll start the show with our misery power rankings. We're going to do the rundown here from least misery-inducing to most misery-inducing of the current five major teams in the Twin Cities area. Of course, number five, the Lynx, least misery-inducing, right? It looks like half the team just won the gold medal at the Olympics down in Rio. Number four being the T-Wolves. Can't argue with them in the fourth spot there, I wouldn't think. They haven't done anything in the last week to make them more misery-inducing for anybody. Three is the Vikings. We're getting ready to have their first preseason game, I think, in a week or two or a week or so here at U.S. Bank. That's all right. Siren, don't worry about that. Lonnie just passed out. Number two, the Wild. There was a reshuffle here in the top two, Lonnie, as I was writing this down today. Wild jumps back to number two. The Twins fall to number one, the most misery-inducing team in the Twin Cities as their sort of iffy play has progressed here. Your thoughts on the misery power rankings?
Right on the money. Twins, boy, it's going to be hard to unseat them for quite a while. And on top of that, Friday night as we record here on Sunday afternoon, Twins suffered probably one of the most miserable baseball games ever that started at 7:05 in Kansas City. And I believe it was about 2:15 a.m. on Saturday morning after a three-plus hour rain delay. And very, very long night that actually ended up with a Twins loss. But it was a pretty good synopsis of what the season has been like for the Twins so far. Just misery dragged on and on.
Yeah, that sounds lovely. I was reading some of the tweets about it, and it was putting me to sleep, even just that. So I can't imagine having to stay and watch. At that point, they really should call it a pain delay. Is that basically what it is? This rain delay brought to you by Aleve and Jack Daniels, basically.
It was bad, and it was nice for me because I was able to keep an eye on it while I had an all night smoke going on, and there was, I don't know, probably half a dozen or so fans that were standing right behind home plate, and with so few people in the crowd, it's like the microphone behind the home plate just picked up every little bit of audio, and these half a dozen guys, Kansas City fans presumably, thought they kind of were going to have their 15 minutes of fame, and it just made things even worse.
Now, all night smoke. Now, Lonnie, just so you know, is not talking about cannabis. One of the things that you and I have in common, just to get off the page here for a second, is that we both enjoy smoking meats and vegetables and the various food offerings of the world. What were you smoking this weekend?
We did 9 racks of pork spare ribs and a 16-pound brisket.
That's a lot.
It was a lot. Normally, not a big problem. I can normally set my smoker and just let it go for about 10 hours without even messing with it. Low temperatures, wind, and rain made it a little more labor-intensive than it usually is, but all in all, ended up good. I was happy with it, and the family was happy with it. More importantly, nobody got sick, at least not as far as I know.
That's good. So it was not the sponsored by Chipotle smoking meat party at Lonnie's house.
It was not.
That's good. Let's try to keep salmonella out of the picture as often as possible when we're making food at home. All right, let's jump over to the Olympics. And we know this is a non-Minnesota sport necessarily. Obviously, there are Minnesota athletes who are involved in the Olympics, But this is setting up a thing that we're going to talk about a little bit here. But the first question along the topic of the Olympics that I think is important is we just watched the men. Again, we're recording here Sunday afternoon. We just watched the men finish off their gold medal victory in the basketball. The women won theirs the other night, last night I believe it was, perhaps. It was last night. So the first question for you is, you know, this has been several Olympics now, and I should know the actual number, but several Olympics where we've had professionals be able to participate in the various sports. In your mind, Lonnie, how is that going?
For me, it has honestly taken a little bit of luster off of the Olympics. As a child, I was at least, you know, growing up watching the Olympics, I was at least under the illusion that it was about amateur competition, even though most of the rest of the world was using professionals all along. So for me, now that, you know, starting was at 92 in Barcelona with the Dream Team. Ever since they started using professional players, especially with basketball, that's taken a lot of the luster off of the Olympics from my standpoint. And like even now, this afternoon, watching the U.S. team get crowned, watching them get their gold medals, just to me, really seemed kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah, I mean, what are the sports? There's only a couple of sports that this would apply to, right? You've got golf, basketball, baseball, hockey. You know, I mean, so there's only a few sports, and North American teams, with the exception of hockey, right, would sort of...
Which one?
And I think baseball may be coming back for Tokyo, right? So that's been spotty, right?
But I don't believe they're going to be using professionals.
Okay. So my point is that of the sports that have pros that they would then use in the Olympics, those sports are predominantly... predominantly dominated by North American countries, either the U.S. in case of basketball, right, Canada, hockey, things like that. So it's kind of cute to throw the Canadians a bone, and I like that. I don't have a problem with that as far as hockey's concerned, although there's certainly some pretty decent competition in the top four or five, let's say, countries in hockey. But do we need to have it? I mean, now, obviously, it's a draw. It probably allows them to sell tickets more expensively, things like that. But is it necessary at this point?
To have the professionals?
To have the pros in those sports, given the sports that it's available for.
I don't know if it's necessary, but, I mean, honestly, all the other countries are using pretty much what's the equivalent of professionals at their level. So I don't have so much of an issue with it. But, I don't know, again, it just takes... I don't know if I want to say innocence is the right word, but it just takes a little bit of that out of it for me. Just knowing that these guys are professionals and this is all they do and this is how they make their living.
Yeah. So we've got closing ceremonies coming up here. Again, it's a Sunday afternoon, but closing ceremonies tonight. Your overall impression on the Olympics, and I'm going to lead into this sort of new idea that we have, this just go away thing. But overall, before we do that, you know, give me your sort of, as a spectator, your overall grade for this Olympics so far.
Overall, I would probably give it a B+, and I say that as somebody that is not on site and had to deal with any of those issues that the fans and media in attendance have had to. But I've enjoyed watching it. I think I watched some of the beach volleyball. My goodness.
Yeah.
Amazing athletes.
Yeah,
holy
unbelievable.
Cow. That's a full-size court, isn't it?
It's bigger than I could handle.
And I tell you what, they certainly put Maverick and Slider and Iceman to shame. Unbelievable athletes the beach volleyball players are.
So you're at a B+. I liked it. You know, I thought that the predicted issues sounded like either they got fared over or didn't really end up being that big of a deal. So I thought it was been a good optically. It's been a good Olympics. And, you know, I mean, I like we talked about last time, I do enjoy watching some of these sports that I wouldn't watch otherwise. I like watching them. Hey, there's Heather Rule. I like watching them have an opportunity to get some sort of, you know, prime time coverage, as it were. So, all right, so let's try this thing out here. So one of the things that we were talking about, and Heather, the famous Heather Rule, is joining us. Hi, Heather. And one of the things we were talking about is, as fans, certainly, you get these athletes who, Lonnie's digging through Heather's purse, who say or do things that just are just overly cringeworthy. And the Olympics is sort of this hot box of, you know, additional nationalism that, you know, sort of becomes something else, jingoism or whatever, right? But you do have people embarrass themselves. So what's your, give me your first, or maybe your first two just go aways Olympics versions.
All right, first one is that, I mean, this is low-hanging fruit after, like, being in all the headlines for the last week. Ryan Lochte, and I've actually, do you guys have any idea, what would you guess, how many Olympic medals Ryan Lochte has won?
I don't know, 10?
12. And Scott, who said 12? All right, very good. We get a guest from the audience chimed in with the correct answer at 12, and that is outstanding. But only one of us knew that answer, but everybody knows all of these ridiculously stupid things that Ryan Lochte does. And
right.
The long and winding point is that the guy acts like such a buffoon that he's overshadowed some actually pretty seriously incredible athletic accomplishments. But anyway, that's about two more minutes than anybody should be talking about Ryan Lochte anymore. So, Ryan Lochte, please just go away.
All right, Ryan Lochte. Did you watch the – okay, so I live in Rochester, New York, right, which is the home of Abby Wambach. And so it's a huge – soccer town in general, but in particular women's soccer. There's a professional team there from their league. There, one, I think there may be actually two leagues, but from one of their leagues is in Rochester, and it's just an awesome city for women's soccer and soccer in general. So that being said, did you watch any of their games, the women's team's games?
No, I did not. You're soccer. You're a soccer guy, right? I can't get into it.
You're not continental.
I've given it I feel like I've given it a chance. I can't get there.
You probably haven't. You probably just don't know. That's what soccer people say.
I just happened to see the men's gold medal game last night, and it went into, I don't know, it went into a shootout at the end.
Okay, which is exciting, no?
But do they not call it a shootout, Nick?
It's enough of a shootout. You call it whatever you want.
Sorry, not a soccer guy, so I'll defer to your... I'll defer to your lingo and verbiage for what are they called, the great game or whatever they
beautiful
call.
Game.
I disagree, but
so it went. I'm not wearing that jersey. That's all I'm saying.
Okay,
go
but
go ahead.
It went to a shootout, and these guys have to kick a ball into a net that's ridiculously big, and if they just by some odd chance happen to hit the goalie or miss the net, they don't score. How do you not score? That thing's enormous.
It happens. They don't convert it 100%.
Okay, like 9 of 10 scored in this thing.
Well, that's still not 100%.
But it's just so contradictory to a game that you see like one goal scored every other week.
So you have bigger beef with the shooters or the goalies?
The game itself. It just it takes an act of Congress to score a goal during the regular course of play, which should be the majority and the balance of the game, then all of a sudden they go, okay, well, we couldn't decide anything over that hour and a half of jacking around, so let's just line up everybody, you know, call fans down. Anybody can come in and put one in. And they just arbitrarily decide it by kicking a round ball into this enormously huge rectangle. I don't understand it.
Okay, well, nonetheless, I understand you have some additional strong thoughts about the U.S. keeper.
I do. So the U.S. women's team gets eliminated by Sweden. And actually, I'll back up. Before the games, Hope Solo took to Twitter and posted a selfie. Is that what you guys call them, Nick?
Enough of one, yeah.
She posted a selfie wearing a mosquito netting and having a can of insect spray and... gist of it was she was trying to be funny about her fears of Zika. So she kind of had one strike going against her with the home crowd with the Brazilian crowd. And women's team goes out, lays an egg against Sweden, and they get the post-game quotes from Hope Solo afterwards. And she's talking about how the Swedes didn't want to advance the ball, and they didn't want to, you know, play the game the right way, and that they just completely went Jacques Lemaire Neutrazone trap on it. Have a little bit of grace and dignity in losing, please. What's the old quote? Was it from Paul Brown, the old NFL Cleveland Browns owner, that said, "When you win, say little. When you lose, say less."
Yeah.
It came across as immature, came across as sour grapes. And you know what? If you don't like the way the other team is playing, do your job and dictate
the
pace of the game.
Yeah.
Don't let them do that to you. So, yeah, just Hope Solo came into these Olympics even before they started. She made a splash, and she couldn't help herself from making a grand exit. So enough of that. We don't need to hear from her anymore. Hope Solo, please just go away.
Okay. All right, let's get Heather involved here. Heather, welcome. Thank you for coming down.
Guys, yeah, thank the twins actually for wrapping it up quickly.
Finally,
this
something positive we can take from the Twinkies this week. All right, so we actually, before we jump into twin stuff, we actually had a question back from episode one, and the guy who asked it is sitting at the end of the bar there, and was it Ferrari and
Mercedes?
So the question was, in Formula One, why can't Ferrari get over on Mercedes? And we said, hey, we don't know, but we know someone who does because she knows everything, and this is our opportunity to ask you. So, why?
Okay. Well, I appreciate the vote of confidence for how much I supposedly know about Formula One. IndyCar is actually my main focus when it comes to racing. From what I know about following F1 recently is it's you pretty much have one top team, and you have two drivers, and they are bitter rivals about it, trying to win every race. I'm not quite sure why Ferrari has fallen and Mercedes has been on top recently. I'm not going to pretend I'm a huge expert on F1. But just from what I know of the history, it's you have one team on top, and once another team takes it over, they're going to be there for a while.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really answer the question.
Is it dynastic or is it just trends?
I think it has to do with, well, probably all the money they're spending too. I know they're just as a sport in general, spending so much money on their teams and the cars and just, everything. I think it's probably just, you know, better teams at the time have better mechanics, better teams. They're finding whatever edge they can, and that's what makes them better. And then in turn, they try to sign who they think are the best drivers at the time, too, to race in their car.
So in other sports, you see a team get well, do well, and then other teams will copy. Do you see that effect in racing as well?
A little bit. I think teams try. Bringing IndyCar into it too, you have kind of Team Target and you have Team Penske, and those have kind of been the powerhouses for, you know, decades really. And I think recently, I mean, other teams they've come into the battles a little bit and they've improved their teams. I still think, for whatever reason, I think it's the money, I think it's the manpower, the sponsorship that makes these other teams kind of stand out above the rest.
Yeah.
As much as other teams, I think, try, it's kind of a vicious cycle too, just with sponsorship and that money. Team Target actually, for the first time in 20 some years now, is going to be down to one sponsored car, and that was kind of some big news recently. And it's just, it's kind of this vicious cycle because, you know, it affects ratings and, you know, how many people are paying attention to the sport, buying merchandise, and trying to get sponsors on board. And I think that really has a lot to do with it. There's plenty of drivers out there, too, that would like full-time rides in the sport, and it's just not possible because there's a lot of one-car teams out there, too, that are just trying to make it work with one car.
Right. All right, let's jump over to the twins. If you're feeling strong enough,
we'll
just jump over to the twins.
Yeah, I can do it, yep.
All right, so Lonnie's been telling me this whole, since we started, that that the big problem for the Twins is starting pitching. Would you agree with that? And what are your thoughts on starting pitching, both as a handicap and then, you know, sort of looking forward, what's in the system now, and do they have more answers, if not the answers, available today for down the road?
I would agree. I think starting pitching, it really comes down to that, because it doesn't matter. I mean, if you can put up 10 runs a game on offense, you have to be able to pitch too. And I think that's definitely been their struggle. Of course, today, Sunday, Urban Santana, who's been their best pitcher, goes out, strikes out 10 guys, and his team can't get him more than a run on the board. So he takes the loss today. But when you see guys like Hector Santiago, who they traded in Alaska for, who has been pretty much a disaster since he's been here with the Twins. And I don't know if that's, you know, he didn't want to be traded here or what's going on with that, because he had some really good numbers with the Angels before he came over. So he's struggled. Duffy's been good at times, but he's also had some really bad outings. The other night he was sailing along three perfect innings, I think, and he goes out there and then he can't throw a strike.
Right.
So, and then you have Jose Berríos, who, for whatever reason, there's a big gap for him between AAA and the major leagues. And I'm still waiting to see if that's something that'll kind of work itself out with a little more experience for him, because he's been good at times too. But yeah, I think it really does come down to the pitching ultimately. And their offense the past couple months or so has stepped up from where it was. Brian Dozier, Max Kepler, they've hit some home runs, which I think has been one of the surprising things too, is they've been scoring a lot of their runs with home runs.
Right.
And
right.
That's not something that's very typical of the Twins historically. So I think I would definitely pick out those two. And then just more recently, I liked what I've seen out of Jorge Polanco coming up. He's kind of split some time in the field with shortstop and third base. But he's, I think, only like three or four games now that he's been up here, this recent stint, that he hasn't gotten a hit. So just being able to be that consistent bat in the lineup, I think will be good too. And I like what I see out of him going forward.
Roy Smalley brought up something really interesting on the Roy Smalley's Chin Music podcast, which you can find at MNSPN.com. That's the Twin-centric podcast on the network. With regard to Kyle Gibson, Kyle's record's currently sitting at 5-7. And Roy said that, kind of along those lines, that when Gibson has been good, he's been really good, and when he's been bad, he's been really bad. And I believe Roy said Gibson's ERA is under 2 in his 5 wins and over 6 in his 7 losses, which I think is just a perfect synopsis of kind of how the Twins' season has gone. There's no way to know what to expect from day to day. Now, they have turned the offense around, and I believe since July 1st, they are towards the top in almost every offensive statistical category. And the thing that I find interesting about that is early on in the season when they were having trouble scoring runs, everybody was calling for hitting coach Tom Brunansky's head, but now that they've gotten that fixed, you don't really hear anybody throwing Bruno a bone. So here you go, Bruno. Here's one for you right here.
The Bruno bone. All right. Well, frustrating season nonetheless, but, you know, I don't know if we're at the point. Are we saying there's little green shoots coming up around the Twins? Or no? Or is it still gravestones? What do you think, Heather? Are we seeing any growth at all? I mean, is there any optimism for the future right now?
Well, I point to Polanco, like I just talked about. And again, some people might say, you know, it's a small sample size, but I think, you know, you kind of look for the positives where you can find them. Him and Kepler, I think, are definitely good things for the future. Everyone's still trying to figure out Buxton, who's in AAA. I don't know. I kind of thought the same thing about Berríos, I guess, that, you know, for whatever reason, there's just this big difference between AAA and the major leagues for them. I think people are starting to get maybe a little concerned with Buxton. It's saying, you know, he's still young, we're going to give him more time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's had a few stints up here now.
Right.
He's been sent down a couple times. Kind of how much time do you give him? So I think there's a reason to be a little bit worried there, not, you know, completely throwing in the towel. You know, I think of Berríos and Buxton with a little more time, a little more experience. I look to them.
Well, getting to what we do here, speaking of a little more time, how much time do you think they have until, I mean, what's the fan apathy level right now? Obviously, it can't be great. I mean, I'm sure there's wide swaths of open seats nightly at Target Field, but, you know, what's your sort of pulse of the fan, of the Twins fan right now? If this season's a lost cause, but you know, do they have a full extra season beyond this next year to still have to decide on Buxton, or do they not have that luxury of that much additional time to figure things out?
You know, we'll see what happens next spring and next year. I would think that if he's, you know, like, say their starting center fielder out of spring training, and if he still doesn't have it with the bat and has to be sent back down again,
yeah,
I think fans will be really concerned with that.
Yeah.
Because it will be just, okay, here we go again. When's he going to figure it out? How many chances is he going to get? I think this season, you're right, I think there's been apathy for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, turned around a little bit kind of after the All-Star break. They, you know, obviously not to recover their season, because, I mean,
right,
they've been in last place
right,
pretty much the whole time, but just kind of like we talked about with some of those positives with the home runs and turning things around to just a little bit, trying to find something. But I think overall there's, it's just kind of lost, and I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens next spring.
Yep.
And if Buxton still struggles out of the gate, that might be a real time for concern.
I'm in the vast minority on this. I'm not worried about him. I think he's going to get there. And honestly, even if he only bats 250 or 260, he is such an amazing defensive center fielder that if you could get that guy to hit 250, 260, put him in, bat him ninth, just let him play.
Plus, you know, as far as time and extending the clock for the Twins beyond the season, the Vikings are going to win Super Bowl this year, which will clearly, people will be so happy with that, right? That'll keep the fans at bay for another year or seven.
Yeah.
that'll definitely happen.
All right. So on this general topic, because Scott's here, and I know he's promised me he's got some comments about this, but on this general topic of fans and appetites for pain and whatnot, a topic that we've been sort of saving from when we could sort of get together for like this is to talk about sort of fan conduct in the building, right? So you go to you buy a ticket, you go to the game, the team does great, you cheer. The team does not great or is not doing well and isn't playing well, even if they're not horribly stinking that particular night. You know, I guess the first question is, do you as a paying fan have a right to boo? And let me define booing as, you know, it's a family event. All the NFL's a little bit different now, but family event. So let's keep it, you know, clean. Let's keep, you know, there is a line. Let's just say that there is a line. But can you give your own team a hard time? Now, I say yes, absolutely you can. And not just because I bought a ticket to be there. I don't think that entitles me to be boo. But we talked about this before, and Scott's comments about this before is what made me think about this. But, you know, I do think that gets back to your expectations for the team, right? If you're comfortable with them not playing well and you're just happy that they're there and happy to be there, that's a low bar of expectation, and therefore, fine, don't boo if you don't want to boo. No problem with that, right? But one of the reasons I don't have a problem booing when my team is playing poorly, which can change within a game, and that's not a problem. One of the reasons I don't have a problem booing is because I want them to win. Like, that's why we're doing this. If we were Boston or New England and we had championships coming out of our ass all the time, then maybe that's a little bit different. But let's start with Heather, because she's our guest. Are fans allowed to boo at the games?
I say yes.
You can come back.
What's that?
On the show.
Yeah.
That was the right answer.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I agree with a lot of what you were saying. I think a lot of times, you know, I hear that from fans too. There's kind of some, there's the different crowds. There's people that are, you know, just happy to go to a sporting event, and you know they're not really that invested in the team. They're just happy to be there, and that's fine. Then there's other people that are really serious sports fans and get frustrated and upset when your team's not doing well, or you know gives up a couple goals in a minute, or has three errors in an inning, and
right.
they're you know, and it's frustrating, I think, for fans that are knowledgeable and know the game and that are passionate and want their team to win. So I think, you know, booing is okay. I'd rather hear booing than the wave, by the way, than see the wave.
I think we can all agree to that. Yeah. What do you think, Lonnie?
Yes, for sure, with a caveat. Know and have a purpose for why you are booing. Like Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter got booed a lot at the Yankees-Twins games that I was at.
For no reason.
Why on God's green earth would you possibly boo Derek
for just
Jeter?
Being good.
He wears the pinstripes. That's
aside from the fact that he's not on your team.
Yeah. All right. But, okay, so wait, but isn't that just a form of cheering, though, for your team, booing the other team in your own building? That's a devil's advocate question, but.
No, it's not. It there's no reason in the world to boo Derek Jeter. Now, A.J. Pierzynski, that guy's got a laundry list of reasons why anybody would want to boo that jag off.
Okay. All right.
But Derek Jeter, absolutely not.
Yeah. All right.
Know why you're booing somebody. You want to boo Barry Bonds? Go nuts. You want to boo A-Rod?
But what if it's
furiously
just, what if
encourage
it's just,
that.
Here's a guy who's crushed us his whole career, and that's why I'm booing. This guy just hits 700 off of us for 20 years.
A-Rod?
Not 700, but you know what I mean.
A-Rod.
Jeter, for that matter.
He's great at his job.
Yeah, well.
So you're going to be pissed at him because he's great at his job.
Yeah, as a Twins fan. That's a form of respect, no?
You can boo him. I'll tip my hat to him.
Okay, fine. Scott, you got any thoughts on this, man? We're talking about come on up here. Grab a mic. Scott from Edina. Talk to me about your take on booing as a fan at the game.
Right, so obviously you and Heather are correct, and Lonnie's in some other universe. Because
all right, Scott, thanks for joining us. We appreciate that.
Because, yes, absolutely, you can boo your home team. No problem. And within reason, of course. There's no need to get vulgar.
Yep.
In my old age, I've discovered this. But as far as Lonnie saying you can't, I'm not saying you have to boo Jeter, but you can absolutely give him the business when he's not on your team. That doesn't mean I don't respect him.
Yeah.
So Lonnie's wrong. I'm sorry. It's not the first time.
Not the first time in the last 2 minutes.
So, that's my comments on that. I have other things to talk about, but we can
do it.
Get
no,
that.
Do it. That's what we're here for.
Well,
Scott from Edina.
I'm calling for an immediate international ban on the two dumbest things in sports. The second dumbest thing is after a guy shoots a free throw, everyone's got to go up and give him
a
high five.
Yeah.
Or touch his butt or do whatever.
Right.
The first dumbest thing in all of sports is after every point in volleyball, all the five people or however many are on the court have to go and touch each other and congratulate, high five. Even if you clonked it into the net or hit it out of – it's the dumbest thing ever. I mean, isn't that the dumbest thing ever?
I agree.
Do you not agree? Thank
yes.
you.
I saw,
confirm this.
I saw guys in the men's tournament, actually, after they make their foul shot. They didn't even turn around. They just put their hands up behind them,
like they're
like just expecting it.
What do you need that for? What do you need that for?
I don't need it at all. Personally.
The second thing that I want to talk about is, and you touched on this last week, Nick, is the corruption in the International Olympic Committee is absolutely outrageous. And I want to know where the USOC is on this. Why are we not leading the charge on reforming this? Because, first of all, they're called volunteers, right? Which is the biggest crock of shit there is. Because the president gets an allowance of almost $300,000. They pay for some suite for him in the nicest hotel in Switzerland overlooking Lake Geneva that's almost $400,000 a year. They fly first class everywhere. They stay in five-star hotels. They don't pay for a damn thing.
Right.
And they eat at the best restaurants. And they're raping these cities like Brazil and making them spend all this money. And then the IOC is collecting $4 billion.
Yeah.
And they don't give – they give peanuts to the athletes. It's like being on an airplane.
Yeah.
You get peanuts. Thanks. You know, where's all this money going? I can tell you where administrative costs. I wonder what it is. I bet it's 95% of their budget is administrative costs.
There's some fantastic accounting going on. So I agree with you, as you know. So let me just ask you what I brought up last time as well, which is how do you stop, though, a Brazil from saying signing up to be pillaged like that and taken advantage of like that?
No. You don't understand how this goes. I rant, and as with all my rants, I don't have the answer. That's what you and Lonnie get paid for. I don't know. That's the problem, right? Because you're going to have all these despots that are always going to be willing to pay. Right. At least some of the United States cities are waking up and saying, we're out. We're not thank you.
So
have fun.
What did you think about my proposal last week to come up with the 4 host country rotation among countries that could handle it?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think the Twins have a better chance of winning the World Series in the next 50 years than that happening because
you can't take the graft away.
Right.
You can't take the food bag away from these IOC officials.
And you know, the other pathetic thing about it is that all these people that are in power in the IOC or even in the U.S. OC, is they're all wealthy to begin with.
Right.
I mean, Prince Albert from Monaco is someone there. He doesn't need. I can't remember if it was Molesky or JG last week. We're talking about this. It doesn't matter because of the same person. But excuse me. They were saying that when they're on trips like now, the high ranking officials get $900 a day as a stipend.
That's pretty good.
And the other people who aren't the high ranking but are also volunteers get $400 a day. That's absurd.
There's a book, How to Live on $400 a Day Abroad. Apparently, it's pretty tough.
Well, if you're not paying for anything, I wouldn't think it is. There was a guy, they brought up a guy who was on, I think, the Paralympic team, and he was a volunteer for London, I believe it was. And he was, you know, one of our volunteers. He was over there. He came back. He couldn't believe it. He had $10,000 in cash in his pocket because he got the stipend every day, and he didn't pay for anything.
It's a pretty sweet gig.
Yeah, it's a good gig if you get it. Can you hook me up and then solve the problem? And that's how this works. I rant, you solve the problems.
Okay, we solve the problems. All right, Scott, man, thanks for coming. It's great.
And finally,
great to have you.
Final thing, the good news is there was no Ferrari or no F1 this week, so thanks, Heather. By the way, no one spends more money than Ferrari, I don't believe. So it comes down to Aero. They have a former world champion as one of their drivers, and I mean, Mercedes has got a great drivers, but they're not better than the Ferrari drivers. And with that, I'm done. Thank you.
There you go. All right, brother. Thank you. That's Scott from Medina. Great stuff as always. You got any rejoinders on that?
No.
Plus, he's right in front of you. I think it'd be a bad move to disagree with him. He's bigger than you, and he's clearly fired up. So there you go. And I'm talking to Lonnie, obviously. All right, well, before we move down the road here, let's talk about a couple of things. First place, I do want to talk about City Works for a minute here. This place is fantastic. Before I talk about City Works, I want to talk about the word gastropub, which has become one of these sort of these fashionable things. I just think that's a bad word for restaurants. But anyway, this is a gastropub, I guess. But beyond that, look, I'm in love with this place. I live in Western New York now, where there are more sports bars per capita than anywhere else in the world, and this place blows them all away. And I absolutely mean that. It's gorgeous. This is the type of place that looks like a high-end restaurant, but when you're here and you're talking to people and you're being served, it feels like a neighborhood bar. I mean, everybody's friendly. They know their menu. Their drink and beer list is exceedingly long. I mean, I'm looking at just part of the taps right now, and it's massive. There's more TVs than you can shake a stick at, which is another fantastic phrase. I obviously can't shake a stick at that many TVs. The food has been terrific, service great, and we highly, highly, highly recommend you come down and check them out if you haven't. And if you have, come back and check them out because the menu's tremendous and looks like there's always something else additional to eat. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, we got some really outstanding appetizers here. We got the stuffed jalapenos, the Chicago dogs, which come with a outstanding mustard relish, and the buffalo chicken dip and chips is Excellent. Very, very tasty. Much highly comes highly recommended.
Yeah, this place is beautiful. It's huge. Great place to go before the game, during the game, after the game. And I believe they are still doing that Sunday Fun Day promo that I know Jim has talked about before, where I think that means that they come around and pick up somebody's tab on Sundays, which is also pretty cool. So please check out our friends here at City Works when you get a chance. All right, let's do a little hockey. And because we've got three hockey people here together, so, and because Lonnie's wearing a very confused outfit, he's got a hockey jersey on that's got red, white, and blue. It's got a Canadian maple leaf in the middle, but it says number 33, but it's not a Patrick Waugh jersey. It's a Justin Morneau jersey because there's a baseball player in the middle. So you sort of opened the door for this. What is where I'm going with this topic?
I tell you what.
What? Do I need to get Scott back over here
no,
for you?
No. You and Scott, you two both better, you better recognize.
All right, listen. So, Heather Lonnie.
You're going to be gumming your appetizers here. You keep popping them chops.
Walked over, but you're going to limp back. So, Lonnie sent me the link to Scott Burnside's article on ESPN.com about Parisi from recently and how he's back and he's healthy and he's gunning for the World Cup and he's psyched about getting his sort of career back on track and making his mark with the Wild and past a lot of stressful, obviously, things, family and whatnot. So I'm going to throw the topic out there and go to Heather first. What's the Wild's window to win? Where are we in sort of in that window right now? I mean, you've got Parisi's 32. Mikko is older than that, right? Suter's the same age as Parisi. Pominville, right? We've got old guys. But where are we on that sort of that arc for their current window?
So you're saying there is a window still. It's still open. It's not closed.
Some windows are better than others. Some windows are bigger, smaller. This isn't necessarily a stained glass, beautiful cathedral window. It might be just like a porthole window in an awful boat, but nonetheless.
And it's not the size of a soccer goal.
Not the size, right? Yeah. Smaller than the soccer goal. So yeah. So however you define their window, where is it? Where are they in it right now?
You know, it's tough because I think fans were really hoping it was going to be the past few years or so. You know, once they signed Parisi and Suter, that things were automatically going to get better and keep getting better, and they kind of sort of have maybe sort of level off a little bit.
Yeah.
I would say, I guess if I'm going to put a number on it, I don't know, 2 years. I just think if it goes too much longer with, I mean, and Parisi plays so hard too, and just the beatings he takes on the ice, and you know, I just don't know how much longer he can go without getting injuries and where he can stay healthy and still play at that level. And then you have Suter too.
Yeah.
Plus the team has had the salary cap issues,
right,
you know, the past few years. So yeah, I guess if I was going to put a number on it, two, but I feel like it's definitely been closing last year and even the year before, where you feel like, okay, this is when we're going to do something, and then they don't do it. And, you know, I just think the Parisi and Suter, that was really key, and I think that's where they need to take advantage.
Is this a team, Lonnie, that has a championship run in it, like a serious run, in the next 2 years?
Well, it's the hockey, you know, it's the NHL and it's the playoffs. You know, once you get into the show, anything can happen. So, but a question that I have for you guys relative to the Burnside article. In the article, Parisi said that he is at 90% healthy with his back. Now, obviously, we all know Parisi's playing style is all about grit and determination, and part of that is playing through pain and injuries and being dinged up. So from my standpoint, if Parisi says that he's at 90%, I kind of notch that back to me. That's like 70 to 80% is what I would say of what a normal person would be. Question for you guys is this. Is Parisi in good enough shape right now? Should he be playing in the World Cup, and should the Wild let and encourage him to play?
If he's not healthy before the season, then the fan in me says no. The wild fan in me says no.
Scott Carlson's mumbling something over here. What did you say, Scott? No and no? Is that what you said?
Correct, but I don't think they can keep him.
Yeah, I don't think it's their call, right? I mean, if as long as the insurance is in place, I assume, right? He's, you know, I think that as much, I also don't think that he would want to jeopardize in his mind a chance at doing good with the Wild this season. And so if he, I can't imagine he's thinking, well, if as long as I play in the World Cup, then I don't care what happens with the Wild this season. So from that perspective, then, well, we don't have a choice, but I'm going to trust that he's okay enough to be doing that.
Heather?
What do you think?
I would agree with that, too. I don't think that he would just go all out for the World Cup like he would, you know, down the stretch for the Wild or in the playoffs for the Wild. I don't think he would jeopardize an entire season or the start of the season with the Wild just so he could, you know, go play in the World Cup. I would hope not. I guess. I would think he'd be smart enough to realize that, you know, hey, if I'm not 100%, or even if, you know, let's say he plays the World Cup and something happens, or something maybe minor, and he gets hurt, you know, where it'd be enough to normally he would keep playing through it, that hopefully he'd be wise enough to step back and say, well, you know, I really shouldn't continue on in this.
Yeah.
Okay, so Nick and Heather, you both trust Parisi to make this call, and you're gonna trust his judgment.
I don't know that I have a choice.
Doesn't mean that someone can't, you know, be a little birdie in his ear and advise him, I guess.
Scott, do you have something on this for us?
No. No, not really. I mean, other than what I said, I don't
think that the Wild get to call it. And I would hope that Parisi would care more about the Stanley Cup than some new tournament that might last a year or 4 years or whatever. I just don't think he would do it. I agree with Nick on that. I think he's got to know. And who knows how much he even plays if he goes. So.
And
so what do you want to – you clearly want to say something. You were hoping Scott was going to bail you out. So what's on your mind here?
You think I'm going to look to Scott to bail me out?
You're in trouble.
If I see Scott coming my way, I'm running, I'll tell you that. But, I mean, obviously, Parisi is critical to the Wild's chances, and you can't do anything without your back.
Right.
So it's going to be a real mess if he plays in this World Cup and gets hurt, well, much as it would for any other player that's playing in the tournament. But that does bring me to another point that drives me nuts with NHL hockey, and that is all of the cross-checking that goes on in the front of the net. And I have no earthly idea why the NHL tolerates it or allows it. If Zach Parise, I mean, we all know the beating that he takes in front of the net, and that's, you know, that's what makes him effective. He's not afraid to go into those dirty areas in front of the net. But if he gets hurt or, you know, misses any games as a result of the pounding that he takes on his back, I mean, the game is worse for that.
Right.
And I don't know why, you know, and Mario Lemieux said it for years while he was playing, and he missed significant injury time with a bad back, and that was part of his claim, is they got to open the game up, and they have to start calling all this stuff and let the true skill players do what they do and show off and showcase their abilities. I have no idea why the NHL allows that, and all it does is damage their game.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why they don't make some sort of a directive and make that a real point of emphasis. Shea Weber, I'm looking at you. No more cross checks in front of the net.
All right. This has been a lot of fun. Before we do some signing off here, let me just mention our friend Tony Hoagland, our State Farm agent from Champlin. Right now, one in three drivers is cruising around in a state of skepticism about just how much value their car insurance company is delivering. If you are one of them, State Farm agent Tony Hoagland in Champlin can help you get to a better state, because he'll talk with you, listen to you, and help you put together a policy that is you written all over it, from cost to coverage, all backed by 24/7 customer support. Feeling less skeptical? Then call State Farm agent Tony Hoagland in Champlin and officially get to a better state with State Farm. Heather, give me something that you are looking for from the Twins between now and the end of this regular season.
Just some more exciting games makes makes things a lot easier. I think the home runs have been good. I'd like to see Dozier, I don't know, top 30, 35 home runs. I mean, yeah. If I pick one specific thing like that. I think just maybe down the stretch, just try not to completely quit and fade, I guess. I mean, there's still, you know, I think there's still young guys on the team that have something to play for, have spots to play for, and really should be showing what they can do up here. So I just hope that they can at least kind of make it entertaining until the end.
Yeah. So. Do you have something to say, sir?
Yeah. I think the Twins had to do some major changes this season in their management in the top office. And I think they had to fire David St. Peters. That's the first one to go. That's the Polad's boy's dad hired him. He ruined the team. They just got rid of Juan, but they had to get rid of him. And also, the new general manager should have the authority to run the team instead of 20 different people behind the scenes. And I've been at several of the games this year. Every game I was at, they lost every one of them this year. I'll give Paul Molitor one more year on the field, then fire him, and get a good professional manager like the other teams do.
Thank you very much. What have you heard lately on the managerial front?
One thing that I haven't really heard anything necessarily as far as status of Paul Molitor, but it's one thing that I've noticed. It's just weird to me that he really seems to stick with certain pitchers a lot longer than conventional wisdom or maybe the
historical
eye test would suggest. Who was it, Heather? There, it was a week or so ago that it was just clear that whoever was out there had just lost it. And Molitor just refused to pull him. It was almost like he was being defiant.
Yeah, there's so many, I don't remember which one you're talking. I mean, there's one.
Remember that one game where the pitcher struggled?
Yeah, the one game.
Last week?
The one that's sticking out for me was a few weeks ago in Cleveland with, well, this was more on Gibson, really. He gets an 8-0 lead, and Gibson promptly gives up 6 runs in the next inning. But, yeah, I would agree. I think there's a lot of times there's this kind of by-the-book mentality of, okay, we're sending this guy struggled in, you know, say the 4th inning. We're going to send him back out for the 5th, and we want him to finish the 5th, let's say. But he goes out there and gives up runs, and it's clear he's struggling.
Right.
I think, you know, there's that point where, okay, you have to go get him. Like, yes, you wanted him to pitch 5 innings, but clearly he doesn't have it. So go out there and get him. I think that's definitely been lacking this year. And the other thing I thought of, too, is the whole bunting situation season.
Yes.
Can't believe I forgot that a minute ago. But I have never seen so many bunts popped up in the air this year by one team. And even just the situations when, you know, they do try and bunt. You know, you'll have your hottest hitter trying to lay down a bunt or something like that. And I don't know how much of that is coming from the coaching staff or how much of it is players doing it on their own. But it just doesn't seem to be working. I don't know. And it's the thing people always say is, oh, Molitor was so good at it as a player.
Right.
But it's not working for them this year. So I don't know. It's frustrating to see that.
I completely agree with that. And I know bunting has a time and place. I think they have tried it way too many times this year. And a lot of times in situations that don't make a ton of sense. But one of my favorite anti-bunting stories was in Game 6 of the 91 World Series. Kirby Puckett's taking his warm-up swings in the 10th inning as Charlie Liebrandt, the Atlanta pitcher, was warming up. And Chili Davis was out. Chili Davis was the on-deck batter behind Kirby Puckett. And Kirby said, as Charlie Liebrandt's warming up and they're getting ready for the Twins to bat, Kirby says to Chili Davis, "Hey, Chili, what if I lay one down? How about if I lay one down?" And Chili Davis' response was, "Man, F that. Hit one the F out of here." And lo and behold, one of the most historic moments in baseball history was born.
All right, this has been a lot of fun. We are heavy on time, so we're going to say goodbye for now. This has been Episode 5 of the Minnesota Sports Fans Unfiltered Show. Thank you for checking us out. Thank you for coming down to City Works for hosting us tonight. This place is excellent. Please stop by for all your eating gastronomic needs, and we'll be back talking with you soon.